Welcome back, 1260 WRC, Andy Parks live from the Washington Times, and I'm joined now by Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
All right, got a couple of things I need to talk to you about. First of all, I saw the headline, Obama eases penalties for businesses hiring illegal immigrants. I guess behind the scenes, businesses have been getting a break, and if they are getting a break, how so?
So this is the president, when he came into office, one of his big goals in immigration was to shift focus away from essentially rank and file illegal immigrants, I call them, you know, the folks who are living and working here without doing major crimes, without really getting in trouble with authorities. The way that they used to be under the Bush administration and previous administrations, that you used to come across a number of these illegal immigrants was through workplace raids. You would send ICE agents into workplaces where you thought there were a lot of illegal immigrants there, and you'd round them up and you'd process them and figure out which ones you wanted to deport. President Obama said he was going to stop those workplace raids. Instead, he was going to start going after the business owners themselves, just basically try and dry up the magnet that was attracting these illegal immigrants, and he was going to do that through what's called I-9 audits. And the I-9, every single person who's ever applied for a job has filled out an I-9 form. That's the worker authorization form. It's where you take in your birth certificate or your passport or whatnot to prove that you are authorized to work in the U.S. And every business is required to store all of those. And so the ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, under the Obama administration, was stepping up these checks, these I-9 checks. They've absolutely done that under the Obama administration. They've stepped up the checks. But they've, in the, I guess it's from 2009 through 2012, they had assessed $50 million in fines, which is way more than the Bush administration ever did, but they cut a break of about $20 million of those fines. They basically said 40% of that, hey, guys, don't bother paying. You know, they allowed these people to negotiate lower fines. Essentially, the reasoning is they're given the authority. It's totally legal for them to do it. But they're given the authority if they think that a business would be too hard hit by paying this fine, at which point the question is, well, if the business only exists because they can pay illegal immigrants and you're going to negotiate a lower fine, wouldn't it be better to impose the fine and force them out of business so that they're not undercutting legal workers?
You know,
there's a real inconsistency there. But basically, so this was an audit by the Inspector General for the Homeland Security Department, and their point was, hey, if you're giving people breaks on these fines, and if you're assessing fines in some cases but not in other cases, you're giving a lot of warnings rather than actually fining people, well, you know, you sort of undermine your own enforcement regime.
Yeah, and one business alone had the penalties drop 78%, and I mean, that was a bunch of money, too.
Yeah, it was from $4 million down to a little bit over $1 million, and that's, yeah, huge, huge cut, and, you know, $4 million of the assessed fine, all told over those, 4 years, you had a total of about $50 million in fines assessed, so this accounted for nearly 10% of the fines, of the total fines assessed, and they cut it down to $1 million. You know, the report didn't list the name of that company, and I'm going to at some point go back and try and track down. There was another company that was cut from right around $4 million to about maybe $1.8 million or $1.5 million, someone like that. So two big companies that got big, big breaks on that, and it'd be interesting to go back and look, and I'll try and find out eventually who those companies were and see what the exact stories were with them, because it's this all comes in the context of the Obama administration telling Republicans, House Republicans, we're serious about enforcing the laws. What don't you trust about us enforcing the laws? You know, go ahead and pass an immigration bill. And the House Republicans are looking back at them and saying, well, you know, there's all this evidence you aren't enforcing the laws. And I actually talked to an analyst from the Center for Immigration Studies who said, yeah, this is exactly the what goes on. The administration talks a very good game, says we're going after employers, but when push comes to shove, they don't actually impose the sort of sanctions that might get employers' attention.
I gotcha. All right, House Republicans recall Lois Lerner to explain IRS targeting. Panel will compel testimony. Look who's back. To what? To plead the fifth?
Well, she can't plead the fifth. She pleaded the fifth the first time, but at the same time, of course, also did that statement where she declared she was innocent.
Yeah.
And the Republicans have concluded that is an effective waiver of her Fifth Amendment self-incrimination, right against self-incrimination. So that's why they've decided they can call her back. The initial hearing wasn't adjourned. It was recessed just to allow her to be called back, and it's taken – what is it, you know, I guess we're 9 months on,
yeah.
The Republicans have finally decided, hey, this is getting hot enough. We now know enough of the outlines of what we're talking about. And in particular, the what we're seeing develop with the IRS and these new proposed rules where they're trying to crack down further and basically write into the rules more bans or more limits on political activity by these groups, essentially codifying what the IRS was trying to do with its audits. With all of that going on, there's some evidence that Lois Lerner was involved in trying to push for those new rules back, you know, years ago, and so they really want her up here right now, Republicans do, basically to try and tar the entire process of these rules by connecting Lois Lerner to them.
All right, so what happens if she says, no, I'm not going to do it?
Well, you know, we'll have to see where this goes. But, I mean, Congress has the power to compel testimony. The only time that they sort of aren't able to do that is when it's an actual fight with, say, the president himself or one of his top aides. You know, of course, the House has found Eric Holder in contempt for refusing to turn over some Fast and Furious, investigation documents. Those documents were never turned over because Eric Holder still asserts his executive privilege,
mm-hmm.
and so when you're at that level, it's tougher for Congress to actually compel. But at this level, where it's just she's not even part of the administration anymore. She, of course, retired from the IRS. Where you're at that level, the House has a lot more authority to compel, and obviously, so they can. She's under subpoena; they can force her to testify. What she actually does when she shows up, she might be able to, you know, have her memory go hazy. But that's really, really tough stuff. You know,
mm-hmm.
You get in some really thorny areas of the criminal justice system at that point.
All right. Have you heard from her or her attorney over this?
No. This news broke late last night, and I left a message for her attorney late last night. He did not get back to me then or this morning, though. Having said that, he hasn't gotten back to me the last four or five times I have called for comment on things from her, so I'm not particularly surprised. You know, he's issued a few statements at the very beginning about her, and, you know, back when she was initially being called to testify and whatnot, but has basically gone silent since then.
Mm-hmm. All right. Meanwhile, the president has threatened to use his pen, the veto pen, if Congress passes new legislation clamping down on what the IRS can or cannot do in scrutinizing nonprofits, right?
Yeah, that's right. We got this veto threat yesterday. And, you know, and this is, in addition to all the questions about the actual Tea Party targeting, and there are still some unanswered questions about that, the big fight that's coming up is this issue of, okay, well, not only did the IRS apparently target conservative and Tea Party groups, but they are in the process of writing rules that would limit not just Tea Party groups, it would limit any 501c4, so any social welfare nonprofit. It would limit their ability to do things like distribute voter guides, get out the vote drives, or even host a candidate for office, which, of course, in the case of a federal office holder, you know, you couldn't host your local congressman or congresswoman in the 2 months before an election if you would be very limited in how you could do that. If you were a 501c4, these rules, and they are in the process of writing them, so they're proposed rules or proposed outline of rules right now. These are drawing objections not just from conservative groups. I actually had a story, I guess, in yesterday's paper where we talked about the fact that you have liberal groups who have looked at these and said, whoa, you know, it's not just conservatives.
Yeah.
We're going to take it on the brunt from these as well. So you're starting to see more than 70,000 comments, which is, I believe, a record. Certainly it's a record for the IRS, have been submitted on this. And I did a quick survey of 200 of those comments, a random sampling of 200 of those comments, and found that it was, I believe I found zero that favored the IRS. There were 9 that had a mixed reaction, saying, well, we understand what you're doing, you're going too far. There were 2 that were just unintelligible. So 189 out of the 200 comments were ranged between opposed, vehemently opposed, and just downright, you know, insulting to the IRS, including, you know, everything from drop dead to, I won't say some of the others. So, these are drawing a really, really harsh reaction out there from across the political spectrum. And the IRS, it'll be interesting to see when they try and finalize and actually write a rule what they do.
All right, you've got about 30 seconds left here. Tea Party Group settles on challenger to John Boehner. Did we know this was coming?
Well, they'd done a survey or a straw poll. They actually interviewed several different potential Tea Party rivals and settled on a guy that they are backing in this race, and so that may boost the guy. Having said that, you know, last time there was a Tea Party challenger in 2012, primary challenger, who ended up getting, I believe, 18 or 16% of the vote. John Boehner easily defeated him, and Boehner has plenty of money to do it this time around. I don't know whether Boehner will get 80% this time. I do expect he wins unless there's a giant groundswell of support for this guy.
All right, very good. Stephen, thanks for the update on all the stories. I appreciate it.
Pleasure, Andy.
Stephen Dynan, political editor here at the Washington Times, 11:54 on 1260 WRC.